How is that to add thoughts as another part of the awareness? Did that work for you okay? Please.
I found that I got through my thoughts quicker when I was noticing them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. When you notice them, you don't tend to get on the train and take the ride to the destination. It's more like you acknowledge, oh, there's a train. There's a freight car and a whatever, and there's the caboose. Goodbye, I'll see you, and then back to your breath. George.
Thoughts are the hardest thing for me not to identify with, not to think that that's what I am. And so to break that association and to be able to look at it is the most difficult, but at the same time, it's the most free.
Many of us think we are our thoughts more than anything. And yet, if you really want to identify with something, you'd probably be better to identify with your body, because at least that's around for a while, right? Your thoughts are there for a few seconds and then they go. And have you noticed about your opinions? The opinions you hold at a certain time, if they really are who we are, they change completely. We'd be an entirely different person. But it's true what you say. Our identity is very strong, and most deeply it tends the tense sense of self. We believe this body to be ourselves, and our feelings are ourselves. But most people, more than anything, take their ideas to be themselves. And so it's a big movement to just say, this is thinking. It's not mine, I don't own it, it's not who I am, it's just thinking, conditioned.
This is a question arising from a certain amount of confusion. I was trying to label my thoughts as thoughts and just let them go. But then when you speak of the kind of understandings that come from meditation, don't those come on the wings of thought? And should not certain thoughts be allowed to unfold so that wisdom can come from them?
Most of the important wisdom that comes from meditation, the deepest wisdom, I should say, comes without thought. It comes as a kind of silent recognition. For example, you may be sitting and desire arises. And say, all right, desire. And all of a sudden there's this observation. This is painful. There's tension in this. It's not much thinking or analyzing, it's just experiencing it. Or some beautiful thing arises in your mind. And you say, this is wonderful. So there's the beauty and then there's the attachment or the delighting in it, which is natural. And then you see, oh, I wish it would stay. Not so much thinking about, but that hoping it would stay. And then you watch it fade away and there comes this recognition, I would have liked that, but it doesn't seem in its nature. And so some of the deeper kinds of understandings, questions about love as well, come through a silent listening. Thought only goes so far down and it can analyze or think about, but deeper things will come without the thought. It's not to dismiss the power of thought. We need it to plan and to think. And even within meditation, there can be contemplation or some reflection about what we're seeing that's valuable, which in a way your question points to. But we're also learning a kind of understanding or way of perceiving that doesn't involve so much thought, but more direct experience. Is that helpful in the confusion? Please.
Can you elaborate a little on the concept of silence?
By silence, I mean not reacting. So that's the first thing. I mean the silence that receives whatever's there, including restlessness and images and words. My teacher used the phrase, he said, take the one seat in the center of the room and let all the visitors come in through the door and pass out the door, and you just sit in the seat and see who comes and goes. So that's what I mean by silence. Instead of getting up and doing a dance with this one and trying to beat that one away and cooking dinner for that one and, you know, tearing your hair out and weeping when this other one comes in, you just sit in the chair and you see who comes and goes. That's what I mean by silence. It's a silence of the heart in some way. There is, as well, this sense of awareness. And it's very subtle. When we don't identify with thoughts, then the next position we take, well, I've got to be in here somewhere. I'm the one who's watching. I'm the witness then. Not my thoughts and my feelings, but I'm the one who's watching. And when meditation gets very still, you can start to listen deeply and sense that there is witnessing. And that witnessing comes for a certain period and it passes away. And it too isn't me or mine. It too isn't self. And then you say, well, wait a second, then who am I? And you say, well, none of these things last, so I guess I can't be any of them. And you begin to understand that you are nothing, and being nothing, that you're everything, that the boundaries are really quite artificial. There are moments of silence without any experience. There's a kind of dropping into the void where there's no sights or sounds and no thought or perception. That happens sometimes too. And then it all starts up again. So that's not the goal particularly. The goal is to be with what's present with wisdom and compassion and freedom rather than with fear and grasping and identification. Okay, that got out there a little bit, so we'll come back for a second to end the evening. I went to my teacher Ajahn Chah at one point and told him I was having difficulties in my meditation, and I didn't like the way that he was teaching so well, and I didn't like the way the monastery was being run and various other complaints. And I said, one of the problems with you is that you're not consistent. I mean, what kind of an enlightened teacher are you? You say one thing one day and another day, you know. At least you could tell the truth. I don't know if I even want to stay here. I'm going to go look for a better monastery or something like that. So he laughed, as he usually did. And he said, the way I teach is like this. He said, there's a road that I look down and I know it well. And maybe it's a bit foggy or it's dusk. You can't see so well. And someone is walking down it. And they're about to fall off in a ditch on the right-hand side or get lost in a little sidetrack off to the right. So I look down the road and I yell, hey there, go to the left. Then a little while later I look up and that same person or somebody else is walking on the road and they're about to fall off in the ditch on the left-hand side or get lost in some little sidetrack over on the left. And so I yell out, hey you, now, go to the right. He said, when I teach, that's all I do. I listen to see if you're attached over here or afraid over there and say, let go of that piece. Now let go of that piece. Now come back to just be in the center and see things as they are. And that's a very, it's a wonderful image for this quality of listening or attention or being with things, finding that inner balance. As I said, next week we'll talk more about how when you are present, there comes a natural way of responding to the world. It's not that you become a mushroom or a dodo or a potato or a meditator or something like that. Spare you all of those things. So for this week, as you go home and continue, then again, this is like coming to your piano lesson. We had a new lesson and there's a new piece of music and we're including paying attention to memory or planning or thinking or if for about half of you, you might want to add the category judging. And judging, thank you for your opinion, back to your breath again. You can kind of thank the judgments. They have all kinds of things to say. So for this week, again, work with sitting, morning or evening or both if you like, for at least 20 minutes or half an hour. Keep it simple. Use the breath as the center. And when sensations or moods or sounds or thoughts really catch you up or are strong, then name them and be with them. Notice what happens to them as long as they're present. When they pass away, then go back to the breath again. And it's through the practicing of it that you start to feel or come to terms with all the different parts of yourself and learn more how your feelings and your mind and your reactions and these things are working. And it makes the meditation then really useful to you in your life.
This concludes the fourth class on the inner art of meditation. Our program continues with the fifth and final class in our series with Jack Kornfield.
We started, as you recall, from the premise that it's possible to learn meditation and learn to practice in a way that's relevant to our life and times in the West, in our culture and our society here, and that we were going to undertake a training, much as one would learn taking lessons, tennis or piano or some other discipline, started on the first evening by working with the breath as a way to calm and collect and quiet the mind and bring the mind and body together. And then opened up in the second week, expanding the meditation to work with all of the energies and sensations of the body, the pleasure and the painful sensations, the tingling, itching, hot, cold, really making the body itself a field of meditation and our reactions to it, learning a meditative relationship. Then we opened up further on the next week to look at the hindrances and difficulties and the feelings of the heart, desire, fear, anger, love, joy, and include those in meditation. And then last week, we included the realm of the mind. In particular, we did the exercise of counting the thoughts and seeing that with our awareness, we can even notice the kinds and frequency and quality of thought, memory, planning, etc., and begin to develop a wise relationship to the whole inner process of thought. Now, sometimes people get a bit confused. As we open up, it seems more complicated. Is the breath better, or should I do the thoughts and the feelings as well? Or perhaps at this point on the fifth week, you begin to think about undertaking the practice after this, and well, how does it fit in with the rest of my life, or how does it fit with other kinds of practices and so forth? How was it for you this past week in working with the instructions that we've done so far? Breath, body, feelings, thoughts. Did that work for you? Anyone? Please.
It was a lot.
It was a lot. There's a thought, there's a feeling, there's a sensation, kind of running around the block, chasing them all.
Right. Huh? And then I came back to the breath. I could find myself thinking even while I was watching the breath.
Mm.
That was really annoying.
To be thinking while you watch the breath. And before you hadn't been thinking while you were watching the breath?
No, I could actually just focus on the breath.
Okay. So one thing to say is that the training that we've done in these different aspects of awareness is to give you a complete sense of the meditation, to give you a sense that it's possible to be aware of thought or feeling or mood or sensation in a meditative way. To give you the range of the power of mindfulness. If you feel confused, as you did, then make it simpler. And there are two ways to do that. The first is to acknowledge the agitation or confusion or whatever's there. So all of a sudden you feel agitated or confused, what you do is note, oh, agitated, and you acknowledge it and feel it and observe it, agitated as long as it's there, and see what happens to it. Then when it's passed, after some time, then you simplify and you go back and you just do the breath until something really pulls you away. And so once in a while there'll be a strong sensation, or there'll be a big thought, or there'll be some mood or feeling of sad or happy that's so strong that you can't watch the breath, that you would struggle to do that. So you leave the breath and you focus on that, acknowledging it and returning back. So you make it simpler. To try that anyway. Even if you do that, guess what? Some days you'll sit down there and it will be agitated and busy anyway, because it does what it wants for the most part. You can train it a little bit, but it has its own life, sort of like training something that's really by nature a wild animal. You know, and you can get it to roll over or come beg for food or something, a few tricks, but mostly it has its own nature. You can make friends with it so it won't eat you up. You can tame it in that sense, but you have to understand its real nature. I'm glad you asked that. Other questions or comments about the past week, please?
I'm finding that the naming of the things, of thinking of fear, the words seem to be like overtaking everything. Like in terms of like if it's like fear, instead of really experiencing the fear, I'm like just saying fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So the naming gets bigger than the experience.
Right.
Okay, that's a good question, also an important one. Two things you can do. One is there is actually a volume control on the naming device. And the way that you might work with it is this. You turn it all the way off first so that you sit there and you're feeling fear and you recognize you're saying, fear, 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 which is really say, go away, fear, get out of here. But you not you see that the voice has gotten louder than the experience. Stop the labels. Just feel what's going on in your body, what the mind feels like, what the heart feels like, what the experience is. And then once you've established yourself in feeling it or sensing it, then like a little salt in the soup, very softly try adding a whisper. Fear. Ooh, fear. But very, very softly in the background. You can play with it. And at that point, then it becomes useful because it kind of keeps track of it. It gets even the thinking process, which would otherwise be analyzing and off somewhere else, directed toward keeping you with the experience. You can play with that. Close your eyes for a second, if you would. Now go inside. Tell me, what mood or feeling do you notice as you sit here? You might be nervous because I ask you to do this. Okay, keep them closed. So what feeling is it?
Nervous.
All right, now see if you can do that. First, just without the name, just feel it. You know, your breath stops or what your body feels like. The state in your heart's beating a little bit. Whatever it feels like. Can you feel it? All right, now add very softly. Nervous, nervous, very softly. Still staying with the feeling. How's it going in there? Okay? You get a sense that you can do that?
Yeah. I think that turning it off completely is the thing that
helps.
Yeah.
Okay, but thank you. That's good. Other people, questions from doing your practice over the past week? Please.
Every so often I'm reaching an area that I think you've termed as quiet or at peace. At that time it's real comfortable, but with the introduction of trying to keep track of thoughts or naming them, it's almost like you hear a conversation in another room.
But then you're afraid you're missing something in the other room.
No, I'm afraid I should be naming or waiting for something to happen, and, and it's not quite breaking through, and I'm missing the peace period, and I'm also missing what's going on, and it's the term that I end up doing is waiting.
Lovely. Lovely. So you're meditating perfectly, and even acknowledging waiting is okay. I mean, just to do that is fine. What happens when you acknowledge waiting? Then what happens?
I get more peaceful.
Uh-huh.
The noise of the thoughts sort of go away, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's a snapback to, wait a second, where did those thoughts go? And did I miss one? Was I supposed to be in touch with one or something like that? Mm-hmm. And then there's like an emptiness there, and it's kind of a different space.
Mm-hmm. There are a variety of spaces you will go through. Some might be calm, and certain people get a little bit, in a very subtle way, a little anxious when it's calm. Well, what am I supposed to do now? It's quiet, which is really a kind of response of a subtle fear in the calm. It's almost like as the thoughts start to go away, who else goes away? Talked about this last week, right? We do, since mostly we're made up of the stories we tell ourselves. The universe is made of stories, not atoms. So we tell these stories to keep a sense of ourselves. And it goes away, and then something in there gets nervous. Wait a second, it's getting too quiet. And maybe I should start thinking about how quiet it is in here or something to get me back. All you need to do is softly acknowledge thinking or waiting or sometimes impatience or anxiety. And gradually you become accustomed. If you look at these things, you start to make your peace with being calm. We're not used to being quiet and not having so much thought. And it's a whole new dimension of experience that can open up. And you can make your peace with it and in fact find it, as you may have at some of those times, refreshing and delightful. Now, one other thing to say about it. That is not the aim of the meditation. It will come at times almost uninvited. It will come and it will become quiet. Other times you'll be filled with thought. Either of those states are equally good objects of meditation. If there's a lot of thought, you know that there's thought there, and you see it truly for what it is, and you relate with compassion and wisdom. There's the mind doing its thinking dance. Then the thought goes away. Say, now there's the space of great calm or spaciousness, and you acknowledge that aspect of the mind. And the in-between as well, the waiting or nervousness. It's a little bit like reading a novel. I don't know if I used Agatha Christie in the first or second week. Did I talk about that? You start to read Agatha, first few pages. You're not so into it, you're reading, but you're also aware of the traffic going by and what's happening, and you're thinking, you know, what you're going to cook for dinner. When you get near the last chapter and you're really excited and who did it and they're just about to sit down and Miss Marple's going to tell everybody what really happened, you can get so concentrated in it that you don't notice somebody walking in the room. You don't hear anything. Have you had that experience in reading? You've been so focused in a book? Similarly, there are degrees of concentration in meditation where in the beginning or at certain times in the sitting, you'll be aware of the calm or you'll be aware of your breath. And in the background, you'll also notice thoughts coming and going and sounds and so forth. That's not a problem. It's just that it's there and you're still continuing to read, but it's early in the book. At other times in the same sitting or another day, you can get so deeply concentrated or collected or surrendered into the breath or body that you don't notice time passing, you don't notice people around, and you have this sense of very deep collectedness. That's just the way the process works. The important thing is to allow that, to see that it works that way, and not to get attached to it being one way or another. You nourish the concentration, you develop awareness, but it's still a wild animal. You can tame it a bit and use it. But the truth is it's going to change all the time, and no matter how good a meditator you are, the mind will do things sometimes and there's nothing you can do about it. The big insight that the Buddha had that liberated him was that you can't control anything, hardly, I mean, you know. And that was where he found liberation. It's a very different direction that we're used to, and it goes deep, what I'm saying. If you're idealistic about meditation, it won't work over the long run. There are other practices, and there are things that I've done, ways that you can count, ways that you can stabilize your mind, samadhi exercises you can do, a lot of breathing and a lot of repetition, and you can get your mind by steadiness and concentration, repetition, and will to stop. And you can dissolve your body, and you can go into states of ecstasy or light. It's really possible. I mean, very accessible if you put in the weeks of effort or whatever it takes to do it. Then you come back, and here you are again. Also, I mean, even though it was far out, just as going to Japan or Antarctic or something would be far out, or taking some interesting psychedelics might be far out or something, it doesn't necessarily give you wisdom. It might give you peace, or it might give you ecstasy, or it might give you light. But wisdom is that which liberates, and that sees that in the long run you possess nothing, that you're not the owner of things. There's a story, one more, of Mullah Nasruddin, I'll tell you, and then we'll do our first sitting this evening. He was going to the marketplace, and he ran to a good friend who said, "I'm about to get married, Nasruddin." And Mullah kind of congratulated him. And he said, "Tell me, Mullah, have you ever thought to get married?" So Nasruddin said, "Well, you know, I considered it. I wanted to get married at one time. And so I went in search of the woman who would make a perfect wife. I went to Isfahan and I met a very beautiful and gracious woman, really charming and lovely, but she had no spiritual side. So then I went further to Damascus, and I met this woman who was deeply spiritual, but she didn't get along very well in the world. I met a woman in Beirut, beautiful, gracious, kind, skillful in the world and otherwise, but we didn't communicate so well. Finally, I found her in Cairo, this woman. She was gracious, deeply spiritual, beautiful to look at, sophisticated in the world, just really perfect in every way. And his friend said, well, then, did you marry her? And he said, no, unfortunately, she was looking for the perfect man. And that's really what waiting's about in a certain sense as well. We can spend our life I don't mean to single you out, because we all do that. Your sense of waiting actually was an interesting and one that's worth investigating. But waiting for the perfect moment, the perfect meditation, even an adequate moment, and an adequate meditation, you know. And there's a line in the third Zen patriarch, one of my favorite lines from the patriarch of Zen Buddhism, who all of his life ended up, he wrote one tiny little book that's about, would be about 3 pages in length. And somewhere in the middle of it, it said, non-duality, or to live in harmony, in the oneness of things, is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. It's not perfect. It never has been, and it never will be. Or as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross put it, I'm not okay, you're not okay, and that's okay. That's the Buddhist truth of suffering, that things are the way they are rather than all the ways that we would hope them to be. And to come into a wise or compassionate relationship with life through meditation is to relate to what is rather than what we would like to be. So let's sit now again for about 15 minutes, taking a posture that's comfortable and stable, letting your eyes close gently, and first coming into your body, we'll just sit for 15 minutes or so, scanning your body, see if there are places of obvious tension that you can soften. Let the eyes and face be soft, the shoulders and hands relax. Let go in your belly and chest. Let the heart be soft. Belly soft. And yet you're alert and erect. This interesting blend, present and receptive. Now go back to your breath. This will be the center of the meditation. Feeling the movement in the midst of everything else. There is this ever-present flow of breath. Feel it as it actually is. Coolness, tingling, pressure, movement, cool, warm. Beginning, middle, end. The breath breathes itself. Let it have whatever rhythms it wishes. Yours is to feel or listen, sense. as you follow the breath and come back to it when the mind wanders far away, if your attention is drawn to anything else because it's strong, pain or pleasure in the body, vibration, itching, hot, cold, feelings, impatience, desire, fear, love, joy, thoughts, remembering, planning. If those things become strong and pull you away, when you notice that you're drawn away, receive them as the meditation's next object, feeling them fully and naming them while they're present. Itching, itching, itching. Angry, angry. Remembering, remembering. Noticing what's there and how they change. And when they dissolve in their own time, then return back to be centered on the next breath. notice what is present just now. Whatever is strongest, feeling it, naming it softly, and noticing what happens as you feel and observe. One more minute. See if you can be present. Sounds, breath, whatever is here.
This concludes tape 5. Our program continues with tape 6.